to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And, of course, one of the great things about this particular show and what we do in general is that we don't just talk about strange stuff and read news stories. We actually go out there in the field and investigate. That's one of the reasons that I am down here in the heart of the Bermuda Triangle on the island of Puerto Rico, traveling back and forth from coast to coast. I've been here for months now conducting investigations and expeditions and trying to keep you sort of updated on what I'm finding here before I head back, before too long, to Asheville. And just recently, I did a West Coast expedition that was attended by investigator Shelley Wright and Patricia DeMint and Andrea Carter, the Canadian. And, you know, they did the East Coast expedition, and then they came to do the West Coast expedition. And it really takes two trips to do both ends of the island. You can imagine, Shelley, it would be way too exhaustive to try to do east and west in one trip. It was a good thing to take a break and come back, huh?
Oh, yeah, you couldn't do both. You couldn't. Not at the same time.
Yeah, it's just, you know, because the island is 100 miles by 30 miles, and yet it does take a while to drive across the island because you've got mountains right in the middle, and the roadways that you have to take can be very congested. There can be a lot of traffic. And when folks come down here to do the East Coast expedition, it's based around San Juan. And that's when we go to the rainforest, and we go to one of the bio bays. We go to all the forts. You get to go to really, you know, the place that established the literal foundation of this island. And then when you come here to do the West Coast expedition, you get to see some of the more beautiful beaches. You get to go to Arecibo. You go to the Kamui Caverns. You get to go beachcombing. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you get to do here. And in fact, I must say, Shelley Wright, for a person who 6 months ago didn't really feel comfortable with the idea of snorkeling or any of that stuff at all, you are now a bona fide official snorkeler. We went to Gilligan's Island, one of the most beautiful places around here, and would you like to tell everybody what your experience was like snorkeling in Gilligan's Island?
It was just so beautiful. It was amazing. The water was perfect. It was so clear and blue, and the temperature was amazing. It was all beautiful, and the mangrove trees and the children falling out of the mangrove trees on top of us. That was kind of interesting. It was one of those last weekends before their school started back, so it was really busy, but we still had a fantastic time. Gorgeous.
You feel comfortable breathing underwater now?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's not that hard, is it, when you just take your time with it?
Just take your time with it. You just have to kind of overcome that initial little, yeah. Yeah, it's good.
And three, and of course, a bioluminescent bay is a bay that glows when you move the water. And there are only 7 full-time bioluminescent bays. By full-time, I mean that are bioluminescent year-round in the world. And 3 of those 7 are here in Puerto Rico. 2 of them are on the East Coast, and there's 1 on the West Coast. The 2 on the East Coast you can no longer swim in. The Department of Natural Resources is afraid that people swimming in them will somehow degrade the effect. But you can still swim in the one here on the West Coast. And, Shelley, you got to swim in a bioluminescent bay. How would you describe that experience?
It was so awesome. It's dark outside, you drink as much beer as you can, and then you go and jump in the bioluminescent bay and swim and enjoy looking at the blue of the water, and then you look up at the sky and oh, the stars. It was amazing. Really amazing.
It's one of the trippiest things you can do, isn't it? To see this, like, I always tell people, if you take like a blue glow stick and crack it open and pour out the contents, that's what the water looks like. You know, it's like this electric blue glow, and it just twinkles as it runs around your body, and it's like nothing else on Earth. You really kind of feel like you're on another planet, don't you?
You do, and you have some facial hair, so when your face was in the water and then you got back out of it, it was all blue and sparkly and twinkly.
Yeah, you look kind of like a phantasmal being, because you can only see the parts that are illuminated around the black form, the black structure, you mm-hmm. know, of your dark body. And so, you know, there are all these magical things here. And yet, what were we going to say, Shelley?
I was going to say the best way to approach these expeditions is just to give yourself over to the experience. You don't know what's going to happen. You know that every day is going to be chock full of things. You don't know what's planned. You don't know what things will kind of interfere with those plans or add to those plans. You just go and you experience it. And that's just really the only way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you say that, because I tell people, it's like, you know, the difference between like a tour and an expedition is, on a tour, it's like you come down here and I'm saying, okay, here's what's going to happen. Here, look at this, look at that. But on an expedition, we're all just kind of exploring together.
Oh, yeah. If you think this is going to be sandals, it's not.
No, I mean, we went to places that I'd never been to before, and so we were experiencing it together. And in fact, I only have one more expedition that I'm going to do down here that's planned for this year. And that expedition is coming up later this month. It's going to be August 28th through September 1st. So it's coming, it's zooming right up here toward us. And if there's anybody who wants to go, we have two more slots available if you would like to be a part of it.
Really, if there is the possibility that you might be able to do it, go for it. You're not going to regret it. It is amazing, and just do it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you feel that way. And everybody, you know, just look at the reviews. Go to ParanormalPuertoRico.com. Look at the reviews. Look at why people come back, and they do the East Coast, and they're like, oh, man, I want to come back and do the West Coast. And it's like, you know, some people come down here, and they turn right around and get an apartment, you know, as soon as they get home. So there's a lot of fun stuff going on here. But one of the things that we did with our group, Shelley, that I'd never done before was visit the Kamui Caverns.
Awesome.
And you know, for those of you who've listened to this show for a while, you've heard me talk about the UFO Lagoon, which is a place you get to see when you do the West Coast trip. And the UFO Lagoon is one of the biggest UFO hotspots in the world. Nobody knows exactly why that is. I have my own ideas. And what's odd is that very close to the UFO Lagoon is this strange military base, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this base later, because I have some new information about this base to share with you. But when they were building this base and some of the structures around it in, I believe, the 1980s, for a period of time, there were a number of small earthquakes in the area, and the water in the lagoon drained. So you have all these fishermen talking about submarines going in and out of tunnels in the island. And there are many, many people who talk about seeing UFOs go in and out. And so going to the Kamui Caverns
is significant because it gives you an idea of just how amazing the subterranean structures are underneath this volcanically formed island here. You know, you can see what the potential is. In fact, Shelley, I guess, was it last year or I guess maybe it was earlier this year, you went for the first time to Linville Caverns there in North Carolina.
Right.
And Linville Caverns are the only show caverns in the entire state of North Carolina.
Right.
And going there is impressive, right?
Yes, it is impressive.
But
nothing at all like Kumuli Caverns. Nothing.
These caverns are, it's hard to explain. I mean, you can get on the internet and then look at pictures, but basically when you go to this park and they put you on the fun tram.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little series of vehicles, like a little train of little carts, and they drive you down this winding path through this jungle environment, and it looks like you are on your way into Jurassic Park, basically. I mean, you look up and you see all these huge, lush plants drooping over you, and you kind of think, gosh, this looks like I'm at Disney World, like I'm in some theme park. But no, it's the real thing. And once you get down there, and you enter the cave, it's funny because there's this point. Well, I guess when you first get into the big, grand, open section of this cavern, and I don't even remember how big it is. It's just giant. And you step in there, and it kind of looked to me like something from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, it really did.
It's like, you know, the area where they're sacrificing people and they're throwing them into the lava. And and they're like ripping the hearts out of people.
Mm-hmm. We were there.
Yeah, it really did. It looked just like that. And as you make your way around these just gargantuan caverns, you begin to realize, like, if this is just one of the attractions that tourists can go to, imagine how extensive some of these places can be underneath this island that could be used for bases and UFO hangouts and all that. And then the Kumuli Caverns are right next to the Arecibo Observatory. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to tell you what it's actually like when you go to the Arecibo Observatory where they are trying to communicate with extraterrestrials. And there are some odd little things about the whole process of going there that we'll share with you. And apparently they built the dish at this site because there was a giant sinkhole that opened up there. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll tell you what it's like to actually visit the Arecibo Satellite Station. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's Speaking of Strange.
Everybody knows.
hurricane season is in effect, and they really worry about it picking up in September. And the funny thing is, you don't have to live on an island to worry about hurricanes. I mean, my house in Asheville got flooded when I was living in, I think, in 2004, when Ivan the Terrible swept through just because of all the rainfall. And if you imagine right now how much rain some of these places are getting, how bad it would be to dump a hurricane-level flood on top of it, I mean, it just unimaginable. And so this is a great time for you to consider getting yourself a Sunshine Simple solar generator for the home, not only because it allows you to be independent and off the grid and be safe and stay comfy when there are storms, but also because you can save money every single month on your power bill. So go check it out, sunshinesimple.com. Watch the free video there, and you'll see why it's so popular and why we've sold them all around the world. sunshinesimple.com. Before we get back into talking about Arecibo, you know, I was reminded of kind of a funny story. When we were doing the West Coast Expedition, Shelley and Patricia and Andrea were able to meet our friend Ida, she is a retired military officer, very intelligent, fun, funny, adventurous woman. She's originally from Puerto Rico. She's a boat captain. I mean, she's a real character. Everybody loves Ida. I call her the unofficial mayor around here. And so we had this big, long day out exploring. We came back here to my condo, and since I've been here in Puerto Rico, I've been surprised by how docile the wildlife has been, okay? I mean, I haven't seen a snake. I hardly ever see a spider. I still haven't even seen any of the monkeys yet. And yet, here I have this group of friends who have come down to do this expedition. I walk into my bathroom, and immediately, oh my God, there is a shape there, and I know what it is. It is a big, fat centipede squirming around. Now, not a millipede, okay? Millipedes are harmless. They're like little worms with a bunch of legs. Centipedes are big, big things. They're like big, flat-looking worms, and they have less legs. But they are very, very dangerous. Okay, if you get bitten by one of these, they're venomous. You're in a lot of pain. You're very sick, and you could even die. So here I am with all these women. I got Ida and Shelley and Andrea and Patty and Lauren. I see the centipede. I'm like, guys, there's a centipede in the bathroom. They start gasping, and I say, I'll be right back. I got to go take care of something.
Yeah. So you went upstairs. You left the girls to handle things.
Yeah, I didn't see myself being helpful with this situation. A pack of women
and
down there.
And you weren't. No.
I figured I'd let you guys take care of the centipede problem.
Ita, she was amazing. She went into the bathroom, and she is stomping on this thing. I mean, really high-stepping on this thing. Bam, 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 bam. At one point, it was just like a dance. It was just a bam, bam. The thing would not die. At one point, she's yelling to Lauren, grab me the knife. And so Lauren brings her knife, and she's like, no, that's too close. It's not big enough. And bring me another one. And she's still stomping away and making all this noise. And then she says, I'm just not big enough. I need more weight. And, of course, all of us girls are looking at each other like, I'm not going in there and stomping on that thing. No way. Lauren was like, I got to go take the dog out. Well, I'll be back. And so it was Ita, and she kept just stomping away on that thing. And finally, she kind of, I guess, stunned it, maybe. But it was still alive when it went into the dustpan. And it was not in a million pieces. And I have no idea where they put it outside, but I hope it doesn't come back, because it's going to be pissed.
And it's one of those creepy things where it's like, it has to be in the bathroom or the bedroom or one of these places where you're vulnerable. You know, you can just see yourself going in there, pulling down your pants, sitting on top of a centipede.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one was coming out of your cabinet, and I was saying, oh, let's get a picture. Oh, no, Ida was right there to handle that thing. She wasn't going to let anything happen to you.
We're all lucky. When I, amazingly, by the time I came down, the whole situation was over with, and I was like, oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I didn't need to help with that.
What a shame. What a shame.
So, yes, there's never a dull moment here in Puerto Rico. And that's why, you know, we were very, very interested in what it was going to be like to go to the Arecibo station with all of this kind of weird conspiratorial stuff. And, yeah, and I don't want to get too specific here, but, Shelley, I want you to verify. We did, from time to time, encounter some very suspicious-looking characters who seemed like they may have been sent there to just sort of spy on us and see what we were up to. Did we not?
And
of course, it's, and in fact, the we are so hesitant to talk about it specifically because it's so true. I mean, there are a lot of things. There's a lot of military exercise and stuff around here, and of course, they're curious as to what we know and what we're up to. And even though I am going to tell you something about one of these bases in a minute, I want to assure everybody I would never say anything that would undermine the capability of the U.S. military or anybody else along those lines to keep our country secure. Okay, that's not the object here. The object is to look at this from a UFO interdimensional point of view. But anyway, the Arecibo station is, it's in an odd place to begin with, because to get there, we were driving for the longest time on these little winding, crummy back roads. And in fact, Shelley, you even, I believe, had some problems with just like motion sickness, right? And the cars were winding down these roads.
Yes, in the back seat, even with my little motion sickness patch on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we, well, one thing that's also odd is that as you're getting closer to the site where the observatory is located, you start seeing what appear to be just civilian houses along the stretch of road that are just riddled with satellite dishes. I mean, just the craziest looking arrays, and you're thinking, why would this person here who lives here have 50 satellite dishes on his or her house? And we even stopped at one point and got out and took pictures of this. The only sense that I can make of it is that maybe you've got those like super diehard radio satellite communication people who are just naturally attracted to go to that area and live, and they have their own little array up to try to communicate with, you know, these alien signals. When you finally go through the parking lot up to the entrance of the observatory, there's a guard box there, and the guard says, he looks in and he sees who everybody is in the car, and he says, you must turn your cell phones off or on airplane mode now. And we're like, okay. So right there at that moment in front of him, you know, you put your phones on airplane mode, and they give you a big piece of paper explaining how crucial it is that you not have your phone on or broadcast any signals, because otherwise you're just going to just trash their whole day's worth of research, right? So we get our cell phones into the proper mode, and then we park, and we start walking up this very, very steep, long, long series of steps till we finally get up to the top of this sort of mountain, if you will, where the dish is located. We got to take another break. When we come back, we'll tell you what it's like to look down on the Arecibo dish, and we'll also tell you how that this applies to the wow signal that may have come from extraterrestrials 36 years ago. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Once my lover, now my friend.
was speaking of strange, going out to high strangers around the globe, I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. And if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you will be able to find a link there to the world's wildest ghost photos. The world's wildest ghost photos. You know, I've been doing this kind of research for 20 years, and I compiled what is currently my selection of my favorite ghost images that have been captured from around the world. So I hope that you will definitely check those out. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, there is no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com. So before the break, we were talking about the recent expedition where we went to the Arecibo Observatory. And you walk up this big, big, long chain of stairs to get to the top of the mountain. You can't have your cell phone on. And they have a nice little two-story museum there and a gift shop. And then you walk out the back to a viewing platform. And you look down and see a sight that, you know, I don't know if I would call it breathtaking. Would you call it breathtaking, Shelley?
No.
It's huge.
It's shiny.
It's a huge, big dish, but it's not like you see it and you go, oh, my God. You know, but it is gigantic. It's 1,000 feet in diameter. And it's in the sinkhole down below you. It is the largest satellite dish on the face of planet Earth. And it's made up of sort of little highly polished aluminum tiles. And they're all positioned beautifully to capture this big wide slice of signals coming in from outer space. And it was built there in 1963. You have, I'm sure, seen this in movies. It was featured in the movie Contact with Jodie Foster. It was featured in the movie GoldenEye, the James Bond film. There's a big fight that takes place there. And it is pretty darn weird to just see this just gargantuan dish sitting there in the middle of just green jungle growth as far as the eye can see. And I know that some of the X-Files fans, like Andrea and I think maybe even Patricia, were especially excited by it. Did you associate that with X-Files, Shelley?
No, not really.
Yeah. I never, people find it hard to believe, but I never really watched X-Files. And so, but apparently it was prominently featured in some of those. And so it was extremely cool to look down on it and to know what this usually passive receptor is doing there.
Although, I haven't been there, but when I think of the Arecibo station, I think of, do you remember the GoldenEye James Bond?
Yeah.
That's what I think of.
Yeah, I just mentioned that. Yeah.
That's what I think of when I think of the Arecibo station, personally.
Yeah. Well, but, there was a big climactic fight scene there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what they have, you got a big main dish down there, and then you have these three towers around it. And each of the towers have what's kind of like a huge cable that goes out to a little receiving dish that sits over top of it. And they can kind of move that little receiving dish around to pick up different types of frequencies. And when you understand what radio telescopy is, you have to consider that everything that exists in the universe is really just a bunch of pulsing energy. And when you look around you and you see things with your eyes, what you're doing is you're perceiving a very, very narrow slice of this an almost infinite range of electromagnetic frequencies. The frequencies that you cannot see with your naked eyes are frequencies that are often in the radio spectrum, and that's because they're coming from so far away that they've kind of slowed down over time, and they've become these huge, huge, big waves. And so when they sit there and they're listening to these frequencies that are coming from outer space, they can take those and convert them into visible frequencies and allow you to see things that you can't see in the usual light realm. So, for example, like there's a movie they show you in little theater, and they say, if there is an asteroid coming to Earth, and they give you an example of this, we may not have the ability to see within the optical range what that asteroid looks like. But they can send a signal out to that asteroid, and the signal bounces off of that asteroid, and it bounces back where they receive it into the dish, and then they convert it into an optical model, and now you can see exactly what this asteroid looks like. So they know when they're looking out there what is supposed to be kind of the normal cosmic background, these waves that are coming all the way from the Big Bang. So when you're doing this kind of work, when you're sitting there observing, if suddenly you get some type of a highly condensed pattern that looks artificial, well, then you're going to get excited because it looks like that there's some kind of a signal that's being transmitted to you by an extraterrestrial intelligence. And when we were there, we were having this conversation like, is this where the WOW signal was captured? We weren't sure, and we couldn't turn on our cell phones to look. And so I asked one of the tour guides, is this where the WOW signal was captured? And I don't think she knew what I was talking about. Do you, Shelley?
No, she didn't seem to.
She didn't seem to get it. Well, it turns out that is not where the WOW signal was captured. The WOW signal was a signal that was captured on August 15th of 1977 at the Ohio State University. A part of the SETI project there with their big telescope called the Big Ear Radio Telescope. And this guy was, let's see here, what's his name? I'm looking over my material here. Well, anyway, this radio astronomer was sitting there watching the signals that were coming in. And all of a sudden, okay, his name was Jerry...
Yeah.
Okay. Jerry Amon, all of a sudden, he looked down and he saw a signal that looked so intelligent, so artificial, that he wrote WOW next to it. And when you start looking into what this WOW signal may have been, the signal itself was around 1,420 megahertz. So that means that tells you how fast that it was vibrating at 1,420 megahertz. And that general frequency is significant for SETI researchers because they say that hydrogen is the most common element in the universe, and hydrogen resonates around that frequency, around 1,420 megahertz. Therefore, extraterrestrials might use that frequency to transmit a strong signal. So everything kind of lined up to look like this was really coming from elsewhere, but then they could never capture it again, right? And it's one of those great mysteries of mainstream science, what created the WOW signal. There's debate over it. Some people wonder if it was a signal from Earth that was reflected back somehow. But the funny thing is that right now a lot of the popular mainstream WOW scholars say that it's whatever broadcast this thing from out in the universe, it may have been almost like a lighthouse, that instead of being a constant beam that was being shined in our direction, it's some type of a signal that's being shifted, that's sweeping around the cosmos, and you just got to catch it, and you might not catch it again for another 50 or 100 years, but that they caught it at that one little second, right? Well, even though the WOW signal was not captured at Arecibo, turns out, and I thought there was some Arecibo connection, last August, on August 15th, 2012, the 35-year anniversary of when the WOW signal was captured, the Arecibo Observatory beamed a response back to that section of the sky. They took 10,000 Twitter messages And who knows what was all, I mean, they say it was everything from like celebrity videos and just messages of goodwill and whatever. And they broadcast it back there.
I think we talked about it on the show when they did it last year.
I recall, yeah, discussing.
We made the joke about it. It's like, yeah, what if some idiot was to say, like, screw you Martians or whatever.
Yeah.
And saying something just
exactly. And, totally we, and they crazy. Start an intergalactic war. They start, yeah, a battle. So Arecibo does have a connection to the WOW signal. We are already up on another break. But when we come back, I'm going to break a little news here. I'm going to tell you something that I've learned about the secret base. And I don't you think it's weird? You got Arecibo here where they're collecting all of this information from space. It's right next to these huge caverns. And then you got this secret base here. And what is this base all about? I'm going to tell you what I've learned when we return. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. P. Warren. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour, and that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, often more sordid and seedy kind of stuff we say for late at night. So we'll be digging into all that soon and catching up, because there is plenty of it for us to catch up on since we haven't broadcast a new show in a couple of weeks. So, all right, before the break, I was explaining that, you know, it's amazing how many things sort of all come together here on this little island of Puerto Rico that tend to point you in the direction of contact with interdimensionals or extraterrestrials, some type of a lensing effect here in the Bermuda Triangle that warps the way energy and communication and contact is all flowing. And you have to be careful, because one thing I can tell you is that I've never seen an alien. So, you know, aliens may or may not be real. The chupacabra may or may not be real. Interdimensional travel may or may not be real. But one thing that is real, without a doubt, is the military. They are here. And those guys don't like it when you're snooping around in their business too much. And I respect that. So, you know, I'm curious. I want to know what they're up to, just like everybody else. I want to know what the relationship may be between them and all the weird stories that are reported here. But I also know what my limits are. And again, I would never divulge anything I happen to discover that could undermine the security of the U.S. It's like even when I read an email on the show recently that was sent to me by someone claiming to work at the secret base, I still didn't include anything other than the paranormal aspect. Well, on our latest expedition here, our West Coast expedition that was attended by Shelley and Patty and Andrea, Andrea stuck around for an extra day so that we could do some research specifically on this base and just see what we could find out. So we got together with Ita and a few other friends, and we went out in the field. We started asking some questions. We started looking at data, and we actually ended up obtaining some photographs of this secret base from very close up, and also the signage at the base. Now, this is not signage that you can see from any of the roadways. This is signage that you would have to get very close to the base itself to obtain. And everybody around here knows that there used to be a big blimp that was based at this base. And this big blimp, the official explanation was, well, it's up there looking for drugs. But then something really weird happened about like a year or so ago. Something went wrong with the blimp, supposedly, and so they had to explode it and bring it down in a controlled crash. So I have a photograph of this base from a close angle, close point of view. But more importantly, perhaps, I have a photograph of the actual sign at the base, because a lot of people I've talked to around here say they don't even know what kind of base it is. Everybody's plain clothes and they don't mark things. Well, I can now tell you exactly what kind of base this is according to their signage. And if it's not posted already, I presume these pictures will be at speakingofstrange.com. Here is what the sign at the base in the close perimeter there says. United States Air Force, Tethered Aerostat Radar Site. Now, mind you, this is actually on Highway 303, what they call the extraterrestrial highway. So it says United States Air Force, Tethered Aerostat Radar Site. On this sign, there are three logos. The first one is a logo of a sword with wings, and it says Air Combat Command. The second one is a round logo, and it has a big white blimp on it, in the letters T-A-R-S, TARS. And then around the outside, it says Tethered Aerostat Radar System, ITT. And then the last logo is a shield with an eagle, and the eagle is holding a sword, and the eagle is flying over planet Earth. You can see the planet in the background, and there are four lightning bolts shooting from the eagle's head, and that one says at the bottom, Acquisition Management and Integration Center. Acquisition Management and Integration Center. Thus far, as vast as the internet is, I have not been able to find that logo anywhere on the internet, nor have I been able to find any extensive information that is not equally vague about what Acquisition Management Integration Center means. So maybe you, the listeners, can look into that. Take from that what you will, but that is how the base is labeled on the UFO highway in Puerto Rico. I'm Joshua P. Warren. When we come back, it'll be time for the Dark 30 Hour on Speaking of Strange.